Today's talk is given by Herbert Hartley, Managing Director of Garsdale Design. His talk should be entitled Geodesign and Smarter Planning. Where's the thing?
Not this.
Yeah, good. Herbert Hartley is a 3D geodesign expert who's known in the trade as a pioneer in use of Esri City Engine. In fact, before it was Esri City Engine. For urban planning projects and 3D city modelling. And Eric has several years of consultancy training and real-world project-based experience with City Engine, as well as many more working in the fields of GIS planning, 3D urban modelling and geodesign. And he spent some of that time as working as a senior planner, as well as a development control officer within local authority planning departments. And his academic career has seen him specialising in geographic information systems at Durham University, as well as in town and country planning at the University of West England. So as a renowned expert in 3D and modelling, Elliot has spoken and conducted workshops at many international events, on the webpage, you can see those, on topics of planning, 3D urban modelling and geodesign. And he's co-convener of the 3D Special Interest Group at the British Cartographic Society, and also maintains a blog called GeoPlanIt,
That's the one.
And which discusses City Engine and geodesign projects. So with all that impressive list of credentials, we really couldn't have any stronger foundations, for what should prove to be a most interesting talk. Therefore, please let me introduce Elliot Hartley.
Hi. Thank you, Owen, for the kind introductions. I tend to, in my presentations, start with my desktop. Just to let you know that I'm interested in other things. And it's hard to get away from presentations I see in various proprietary software vendors conferences where they show you the world's most perfect workflow and data sets and they're completely closed down hardware. So I thought, no, I play games, my work and my playtime is somewhat merged. I use work expenses to justify the hardware. But have a look at what's on the screen, and really it seems to be overkill getting some kind of i7 processor for Command and Conquer from what 10 years ago. But I think it's important that we understand this sort of thing before we move forward. And I think having that understanding of me and my background will help a little bit and show you sort of what I think is quite a personal journey. And a personal presentation. It's not going into depth in technical specs and that. If you want a conversation about that, I'm more than happy to do it, but not at this one. So if I start thinking with some PowerPoint first. I get terribly nervous, so I always bring a script, so I do apologise. I know some people hate reading scripts and things, but it lets me fall back to it a little bit. I'm Elliot, and this is our office in the shade, actually. We're a family-run consultancy. Thinking of turning it into a geo-design consultancy rather than architecture, planning, heritage and urban design. And really, when I say family, I mean family. My mother founded it as an architect. My father is a city master planner and worked in the Middle East and North Africa for 40 years. Did I mention my wife's a heritage specialist? Okay. My brother-in-law does the CAD work. We do a range of work from small domestic architecture right up to city master planning, and now this sort of 3D geodesign work that I'm dealing with. We have been known, this is me showing off a little bit more. Stage one was complete when I got into reading our website. We've been in really known for our master planning projects in Iraq. That's where some of us might have been, you heard about us. But we've also come into this sort of world of 3D geo design, hence this sort of stuff. And occasionally I turn up at awards and give them out because, maybe you're good at it, I don't know. but here's what I've come to talk to you about. It may be a little different to what was on the abstract, I do apologise for that. I wish I had the confidence of that person writing that 6 months ago in abstract and then having to implement that. So there's a little bit of divergence, but not too much. So I hope you forgive me a little bit. It's not going to go on too long. But let's start with some background. because I think it's important to set my presentation in context. You see, I think we as a species, humans, I guess that's us, have got ourselves into what I like to call a pickle. A large population growth coupled with a shift the human population to urban environments, and by 2030, it's a relatively new report, 60% of humans will live in urban areas. A key challenge in here is how do we manage this shift? We know cities can be efficient places to live for a variety of reasons, but how do we do, as this UN report sort of states, make cities and human settlements inclusive, safe, resilient, and sustainable? In the wider context, the impact of our lives on the environment means that whatever we do needs to be done fast and efficiently. And due to our increasing reliance on urban areas to live and work, I think naturally our focus on tackling climate change should perhaps centre on cities first. We live in challenging times, right? Certainly here in the UK, having a look at this report that was just out this week by the Centre for Cities points out, in particular, UK cities are showing tremendous pressure in the development of budgets, but at the same time, they're showing their value to the economy, right, and the value to the environment when it comes to carbon emissions. It's not all doom and gloom. I don't believe that. I think we have time to change, even if it's running out. But this is a challenge, right? I think we probably know too much, or maybe better phrased, we have a lot of information. Think about how much data we now produce as a society, yes, including social media, that is sitting somewhere, either serving advertising purposes, or just sitting on a shelf somewhere. I mean, a lot of my work, I've come into contact with people who have a lot of laser scans and LIDAR, and it's on a hard drive sitting on a shelf, and they use it for one measurement or two measurements and then do nothing with it. Right? How are we going to deal with that? I think my argument today is that if we want to tackle climate change, if we want socially inclusive, happy, productive places to live, work and play, we need to manage and design things. We need to use this massive information we've gathered in our design process and our decisions. Obviously, as professionals, we can't know everything about everything, so perhaps technology should allow us to share knowledge easier. I think too often, professionals are trapped, and I certainly am a lot of the time, either by choice or circumstance, in either sort of bad decision-making circles, trapped in software, trapped in data, a mindset trapped. I mean, technology should free us or enable us to do better, yes? Think about these bullet points and ask yourself, am I trapped? Well, not me. Try yourself. But these aren't made up. They are my direct experience of working others, and some of them you will recognise, some of them you won't, but these are the ones that I could think of. And I think the most frightening one that I've seen a lot of is we've always done it this way. There's a sort of built-in intransigence. You don't want to move things forward. You don't want to move the organisation in case you make a mistake. Yeah? I quite like making mistakes. I call it learning experiences. So, there is hope. Don't worry. Concepts such as building information modelling. Have you heard of that? Fashionable at the moment. Has anyone got Buzz or a Bingo tonight? Geodesign, which I'll get onto in a little bit, that's my little passion, offers a solution or a way of thinking that joins up professional worlds to tackle work together. For example, BIM isn't a file format or a specific software package, right? It's a way of working, it's a holistic way of working in the built environment that produces efficiency gains if done correctly. There's another discussion for you. From plans right down to detailed construction drawings and management beyond the buildings. So, with all that in mind, as a private consultancy like ours, we still have to work for a client. And what the client wants is kind of important. And clients are notoriously easy to get on with and satisfy, I'm sure others will know.
We've got to do these things because I've got to pay the bills. I've got to support a family, for starters. But think about these things on the screen. We need to produce a range of deliverables, not just reports, but now I'm asking, it used to be physical 3D, but now they want it on the web, and they want it augmented, and they want it on your tablet, and they want it on your PC. And God forbid it doesn't work on your Android phone, they need it on the Android phone, they don't want it on the iPhone. I mean, there's a lot of, a range of products that we now have to deliver for. But we're still doing all those reports, we're still doing all that design work. So how do we do it? How do we cope? Oh yeah, an on-time budget, thanks. Yeah? Who here has had one, heard one of these phrases? Just want me to make a map. Go on. Off you go. Can you do it? Christ, I can't. A map? What does that mean? It's like taking a photo? Is that a map? Is that how we make a map? No, we need all sorts of information to go into this. And the next phrase after this, after you've done the map, is, oh, not like that. I didn't mean it like that. Oh, there's a lot of assumptions in that, but there's a lot of people who still, I'm going to say managers, and I'm a manager in some form or other, will just come to you and say, I want a map, do it now. How long will it take? You know, a map will take a day. It takes me a day to do an email, if it's important, right? Do lots of drafts of it. So, maps are a little bit harder, I think. And 3D modelling, just as, you know, does anyone truly know what a 3D model is? Is it physical? Is it digital? Does it have textures? Is it diagrammatic? Is it analytical? Does it have rooftops? Is it extruded?
A number of times I talk to geospatial professionals and they say,
what's wrong with the attributes? You know, that these are the things we need to understand about the client. Is what the client wants compatible with our planet's needs and requirements at the moment? Maybe not in the past, I'm hoping it is in the future. How far, as a professional, can I push a client into making better decisions, informed decisions? Invariably, there's a cost involved, right? How far do we push it? For instance, city master planning, often you'll give them the population projections, you'll crunch the numbers, you'll say you'll leave this X amount of space in the city, and they'll go, yeah, but we need to give it to some companies, some land. Can you double it? And so all your professional work goes out the window. You can say no, but they'll still want that allocated anyway. So the reality sort of hitting when you're trying to do these sorts of things can give you this choice. Do I get paid or do I argue with the client for the next 6 months over this? Depends who you are. I think if you're fostering partners, probably you can get away with it a little bit better than a small family firm in Northern England. What kind of things are we looking for? Urban growth with zero or negative impact on a range of environmental factors. Happy, healthy, peaceful humans. Sounds very bland, but I don't think anyone would disagree with that, would anyone? Good. Maybe. It's okay to disagree. So let's fix these. Let's do something about it. We can't do it without help. Not without all this information and all these tools that we have available. How we collaborate with others is a big factor in my business. Recent technologies has improved things dramatically. This picture is of our work with Philadelphia University, now Jefferson, and we're doing geodesign charrette, where academics from different disciplines sit in a room and work on a concentrated project. Brought together different professions working on a particular design scenario or solution, but we've got landscape architects in there, we've got GIS professionals in there, we've got urban planners and architects, and then people like me on the outside advising on particular aspects of software. They're all using different stuff. Social media it has inspired business tools, right? Anyone use Slack or Teams? How many social media accounts do you have, and then how many Slack and team groups you have, Tom?
I
I'm picking you out because I know it's a lot.
Slack is decreasing, social media.
Yeah, video conferencing is great, but there's this thing called time zones when we're working with Teams. Not Microsoft Teams, just Teams in general. And time zones really scupper things, certainly when you're trying to do dinner with your kids, and there's a business meeting that you need to attend as well. So the number of times my kids have crashed these things. It's fairly typical, actually, nowadays, to have business meetings with your kids in the background, and no one seems to have cared. It's a little challenging, right? So these social media type tools, Slack and Teams, allow us to time shift conversations. So we don't always have to be immediately responding. And they're a little bit more dynamic than a regular email. We still use that, but it's less than social media type tool stuff. And that's why I like things like Twitter. It allows me to interact with team members in my terms, on my terms, rather than on others. And I think that's why Slack and things like that don't really work. Well, we've always worked in small teams with other clients and colleagues around the world. That used to be emails and phone calls, but now it's video conferencing and social media. And cloud storage like Dropbox, don't think it's all one nice seamless link. It's definitely not. And we don't have a proper server in our office. Everything's shifted to the cloud, a lot of it. We've got a file server that everything else, a lot of our tool sets are now moving into the cloud. I'm afraid we don't just... Every presentation needs a meme,
you know? This one seemed to work.
I couldn't quite bring myself to put in the rice. We have problems and challenges to overcome, okay? And we have new communication tools for collaborative working. Now what? Well, this is where my story comes in a little bit. Our challenge back in 2009 and 10 and before that as well was managing a couple of large city master plans that we were doing in Iraq with Iraqi partners. We were working as a team, right, across the globe in a way. And we needed visualizations. We need reports and associated metrics. We needed projections. We were using Excel, we were using Office, we were using ArcGIS. But the visualization side of it was really tricky. Because I was using SketchUp. Has anyone used SketchUp? Remember that? So SketchUp is a 3D modeling tool, and it's quite useful in urban design scenarios. Lots of people use it. Architects, there's two types of architects, ones who hate it and ones who love it. But it's incredibly useful and quick. It was a game changer this time. But having to do context modeling for large city areas using SketchUp, click, drag, it's sort of grated because it tends to end up being me. At the time, I was looking for a way of anything but doing the next 100 plots like this, right?
And the client's going to change their mind anyway. So let's
try something different. And because of my interest, because I like playing computer games, I thought there's a better way of doing this. There was a whole industry out there producing vast visualizations for computer games, city visualizations for computer games. What is there out there? So I looked around and I found this tool called, from a company called Procedural. It was called City Engine. It was from a startup from out of ETH Zurich. And it produced large geotypical 3D urban models by using coding to destroy 3D geometry. It was a really game changer. The beauty of this tool was that you could ingest geospatial data and use the attributes to build up dynamic models. It's the kind of workflow we use on a project. It's generic
workflow, but you know, you start the project.
Certainly in master planning, you've got to analyse this and the area. You've got tools to analyse it, that's your GIS, and you analyse it, and out of that you think, okay, these are our constraints and opportunities. So we start to mix around with pen and paper and sketch out these things and visualise them, and then there's a lot of drawing of AutoCAD, and then you know, there's SketchUp, and we bring it all together, and at the end we hopefully have not just a report, a PDF with some nice images in, we hopefully have some drawings, A1. Right, if you think it's difficult printing regular reports, try printing, I don't know, 50 or 60 very nice large maps, A1, and then send the digital file to someone else who doesn't necessarily have the same equipment as you, and hope the colours work at the other end.
Crying out loud, it's a nightmare. And then you submit it, and it's hooray, you submit it. It's great. The client goes, no, don't like that. And invariably, it's the thing, you see, reports, who reads reports? Genuinely, there's very few people who read reports. They love the visualisations, they love them. And they, they look at the visualisations and go, oh, that's not like that. So invariably, not only are we having to change the report at the last minute, yeah, because we're on time, right? No, of course we're not, we're overdue. We're going to have to do this circle again. So where I found City Engine to be useful is there, replacing what SketchUp was doing. So at least I wasn't mucking around with visualisations when I just needed to change some of the mapping and some of the attribution. And that has changed everything for us. That last minute change, which is always, always required, no matter what project I've ever worked on, please don't tell anyone. So that's really, you know, important. Oh, and hopefully you get paid for it. Hopefully. Watch out for big organisations, that's all I say. Here's a choice for you. This model, I've used it a lot in presentations. This model is SketchUp. 4 days, my father took 4 days to do that. This one, top left hand corner, City Engine. Half a day, at best. Thousands of plots. Hundreds of plots. It's easy to see why something like that tool, like City Engine, is important to us. And we still use SketchUp. We use them for the little details. We use them for the bits that we have made before, like a satellite image, like a water tank, to make it look like the area it's for. And then we've still got that. So that's really why we came to look at 3D, look at a tool called City Engine, and really why I'm coming to you today to talk about geodesign. But in case you don't know, City Engine is now owned by a large unknown company called Esri. I think that's right, isn't it? A lot of people know it, but they don't know it, I think. But it is a standalone application, and it's been used in the movie industry, it's used in the entertainment industry, but it's also used in the geospatial, and it's been turned into an urban design tool. Why? It's great for urban models, for development scenarios and analysis.
And I quite like it's quirky. The reason why it's sort of a standalone product, it probably won't be merged. One, it's in the entertainment industry, and two, it came out of this PhD project. So it's built on a very different platform, and something called Eclipse ID. But it was there specifically to design geotypical and fictional cities, right? One of the stories behind it was the guy who created City Engine wanted to produce the models he saw on Blade Runner. Right? Now, the new update to the movie Blade Runner, I can't remember it, I didn't watch it yet this year. They used City Engine. So it's quite a neat circle. Right. For us, I think it's important. It's weird. One tool showed us a different way of working, showed us a different way of designing that wasn't part of our traditional workflows. I did not learn this at Town and Country Planning. My degree didn't also tell me about GIS, which is really weird in a planning degree, right? But we're producing a lot of different things out of our 3D modeling now. Built under this thing, under GIS data. So, we are producing game mapping, we're producing analytical models, we're producing real world geotypical models, and you feed it a different footprint, it gives you a different metric, it gives you information about floor area, it gives you volumetric data. You can add, because it's procedural, because it is programming language, you can add metrics to it like to your heart's content and get your own calculations out of it. It's really powerful and very immediate and dynamic. And we're using it all, really. So here we are, and I know it's taken me a bit of time to mention geodesign again, and this thing I think of as smarter planning. But context is everything, right?
Geodesign,
here we go, geodesign is a relatively new term associated with a company called Esri, and I think unfairly so actually, because this sort of detracts people from it. But I think it's a really useful term for a lot of the people that I work with in our profession. It's a collaborative set of concepts or methods that facilitate optimal design solutions in an integrated process which takes account of the geospatial context. Big words, but wouldn't it be nice if we all worked together seamlessly? Would be a better way of using it, right? Originally, I think it was used in regards to the design and planning phase, but it's much broader than that now as a term. Geodesign builds heavily on the work of academics like Carl Steinitz and borrows heavily from the geospatial disciplines, hence the small number of degree programs that we're seeing around, and they come in from this geospatial discipline. Its ultimate aim is to provide the work of teams doing design iterations and associated analysis and feedback quickly and efficiently. What interests and excites me here is that geodesign is really about communication and learning from other disciplines. Remember I told you about the Philadelphia example. That was about learning from others. That was bringing people together, because there are time and time again you will work with professionals and they'll give you a CAD file, for example. And the CAD file will have come from some kind of survey drawing, very carefully crafted and made, you know, by surveyors. They give it to the people who are going to do the CAD work on it, and then they zero-zero it. They strip out the geographic context. Or they go, oh, I'll copy it and move it over here. So when a GIS person comes in, when a planner comes in, can I fit it in my map? Hell, I can't. I don't even know how this thing is captured. And that still happens to this day. Architects do not know about GIS. GIS people don't know about these things. It's really weird that we're still at that stage in a lot of professions. So, standards. I'm not a big fan of standards, and I know that's a really bad thing to say for people, especially sitting in the room. AGI, and certainly this week when we've had some international standards announced for smart cities. Yeah, a lot going on, and I really haven't. One day I'll tell Tom about the time I went to an OGC meeting and told him I wasn't fussed about standards. I think the perception for me has been that these things have tied us down in a professional context. They tie me to older technologies, and the client wants new and shiny. I want new and shiny. And there seems to be a lot of them. Right? You have to bring out this cartoon. Anytime anyone speaks to them, you have to bring out this cartoon. But I think, right, geodesign only really works, and I really like the idea of geodesign. It only works if we're all talking the same language, if we're all sharing in the same way, in some form, that we are prepared to do this. And I think the standards are actually evolving much quicker than they were when I started out in academic life. And I think it's really interesting where things are going. I mean, there's a lot to get a grasp of, and things are changing all the time, and you have to pay £50 for a PDF. And, you know, the standards are there and evolving, and there's terminology for 3D. And if you talk about 3D, there's this thing called level of detail, but then in BIM, there's something called level of detail. And no one's talking to each other about this. And level of detail in 3D has no bearing or relationship on textures, which is what all the clients want, and file size, which is jolly important if you're trying to put it on the web and stream it to someone on their phone. So that's happening at the moment. There's lots of people working on the standards, lots of people working on the terminologies, and geodesign will take and use this, and it's really important. I think, you know, standards, yeah, flexible file formats, yes, in terms of usage and or licensing, facilitates and are helpful for our genes and workflows. I think you often see sort of disappointing the clickbait type argumentative reasoning of some. I find it a little unhelpful. You know, I'm all about, you know, just use what gets the job done a lot of the time, but you know, you can't get away from discussions about which is best, proprietary versus open source. Surprise, they're both pretty good, and you use them when you need them, right? Don't assume anymore, and it's in academic circles you got brought up, I got taught ARC info, you know? And I went out into the real world and it wasn't ARC info anymore, it was probably, you know, it was a different license version, a different level, and you have to step up to that. Assuming your own little silo is the only way of doing things is pretty bad news at the moment. Don't discount it because it says CAN or GIS. Yeah. Don't have a look at it, see if it works for you. And lots of people still think that this new software, 3D gaming technology, is somehow a gimmick. You know, we're all growing up with games, right? Our children are growing up with games. They implicitly know things about games and how to interact with them. We should be learning about that. The little anecdote that's not on here is one of my daughters took her to, I think we were crossing a road. We were looking at the traffic signals to press the button, right? You and I, we would probably just go for the button, right? She went for the glass edge and tried to swipe the red man to the green man. Why? Well, because we're so... probably a damning indictment on my parenting technique. Yeah? But I think we forget, you know, we get stuck in this way of working, and the world is changing. Outside of our professional discipline, the world is changing, right? So I think, you know, we do have to learn a little bit. Here's a typical master planning workflow that I've seen. It's not the way we do things, but lots of people use AutoCAD, which is sort of a tool for... I've never really seen it other than just as a tool for doing architectural drawings, but they're using it for the city master planning. And I'm saying, look, you can bring that data into City Engine and you can produce all of this stuff here. But what would really be good is if you could add some attribution to it. I added the QGIS logo. It's not all about Ezra. But if you could add attribution to it, and in fact, a lot of people use CAD because it's a nice way of drawing digitally, and it's got a lot of good edit tools back, actually. These tools, like QGIS and ArcGIS Pro, have a lot of fantastic editing tools, and I'm not saying you throw away those skills in it from AutoCAD, but I do say this workflow where you can add attribution at the same time. For example, my father, I will set up a template for him to work with. We've got our planning standards, and with various attributes built in. So, because I'm going to draw a type 2 polygon for housing that's going to be 5 metres or 10 metres in height. Yeah? And he'll just draw that out. Right? The attribution's built in, doesn't have to think about programming, doesn't have to think about the technical aspects of the GIS. And when I come to drag it into City Engine, I've got a rule file that interprets all that and visualises it instantly. It's changing some of the things. We've always done a lot of this stuff, but we're putting it together in a smoother workflow. Right? And now there's this sort of loop. We're doing this loop. So we're finding out information from City Engine. We're doing analysis on that data, traditional GIS techniques, and going back. And we're doing this in less than a day. You know, we're going through, you know, we can go through hundreds of different sort of planning scenarios with different metrics and reporting. It's just incredible. And then at the end of it, yeah, we can print it. But this sort of stuff that we're experimenting with now. I have to put this slide in a lot. It's just to remind people that it sounds all flashy graphics and cool stuff, but actually the origins of GIS and 3D, when I talk about 3D and geodesign, are actually fairly similar in terms of timescales. This is a highway in Stockholm being visualised in 3D from the
the 60s.
This is a Pixar hand animation that you might have seen in Westworld,
the original.
And then at the same time as they're doing this, Roger Thomason doing something pretty amazing about that, talking about GS with the stuff. So the difference between the two actually is the hardware for doing the 2D mapping is a lot less than the hardware for the 3D. You know, there is a difference, so that's why this feels more established, traditional GIS methods and CAD methods, than the 3D. But actually, the scientific principles are all there. Well, as I mentioned, I'm my own boss. I'm quite lucky at the moment. But I've had good managers as well in the past that have let me and tolerated me playing a little bit. I think that's really important. Play's not trivial. Feels like it is when you're doing it, but I think it's really about experimentation. I don't mean play as in just playing, Fruit Ninja. Yeah? Okay. I mean playing around with the tools that you have, and maybe at the end of the day not achieving an awful lot. The number of times I've been working on my new bits of code for 3D visualizations in City Engine, and really people walk past and all they see is me playing with some 3D imagery, yeah, or something, and they think, oh, you're not doing much work. Well, actually, it's really important at this stage that you find out and you learn from other industries. Here's a good example. So you may have heard I work a lot in 3D. How do you display data? How do you display metrics, buildings, and give the user, the end user, like the client, a freedom to view from any angle? It's a real problem for a lot of people. And I think, hang on a minute, 5 or 10 years ago, SimCity was inventing it for a game. Yeah, this was training people, this was information and modelling, but it wasn't real world stuff. But it was a simulation, and they had already figured out a lot of the cartographic principles that people who are working in 3D are doing now. You'll see a lot of white buildings. Why? Because they work a lot quicker. You'll see transparencies. Why? Because you like to see the context of the model. So learning from computer games is not trivial. It's the way of doing it. I implicitly knew when I started working in 3D this was the way of doing it. Why reinvent the wheel if this is so effective? Now, let's not go overboard like I've done with Photoshop. Yeah, this is me procrastinating quite badly. I did this old Angry ArcGIS is from ages back for the other lot. God, I was just, yeah, I was playing. There's real work actually in this. Gamification. Who's heard of gamification? Okay, this idea that you can do real work using gaming principles, collecting information, getting the populace or stakeholders to go out as part of the game and tell you about the city, sending them out with mobile phones. But also, what's wrong with me digitising something nicely and getting rewarded for it? I keep joking with people like Esri that they should reward me with some credits every time we digitise something nicely, right? But it rewards you for good behaviour, and maybe that's the way we cope with this massive amount of information, environmental and other constraints that we have in the planet. Maybe it should be a little game-like, encourages us to do the good things, encourages us to see what happens when we break it. That's why there's a disaster button in SimCity. God knows why I hate pressing that button, but you can send aliens over it and things. But, you know, being able to play, getting feedback back about what you're designing, that feels like cheap design, that feels like smarter planning, doesn't it? I think the big news for us at the moment, as architects, planners, heritage specialists, is this. This gaming technology, and I've talked about sort of the principle of gamification and stuff, but these game engines that we're using now, I mean, I came across Unreal when they were actually doing games, and now they've got this thing called Unreal Studio, and they've got a data importer, because they realised they could hook in a lot of architects who were already doing it, but now they've doubled down on it. We were already experimenting. They were using it so you could mod levels, right, for computer games, but architects were saying, oh, wait, we could, we And so I'm finding that's why I've got this hardware, honestly, it's not just for play. So we can experiment with these. And these game engines allow us to do not just games on our tablets and PCs, but also virtual and augmented reality. I hear someone coming talked about augmented reality. It's not just dots on a map, just saying on the survey. But it's incredibly important that we look at this. This is where architects are going. And it saves us money, let's face it. There's not a day that goes by that I don't get an offer from a Chinese company offering me to do 3D visualizations for $600 an image. Well, if I can just press a button and it goes into Unreal Game Engine, and it's done. Yeah? Easy, right? I think it's easy. I think so. Well, I'm not sure how long I've been. So, I want to end on a few thoughts, because it is a personal journey, and I do want you to come up afterwards and talk to me if you want to have a look at how City Engine works. I'm quite happy to, you know, walk through with you that sort of thing. But do we want this as a future? Anyone recognise the building?
Stop!
It's funny, I put in, I'm getting them from Unsplash, right? So I put in Edinburgh City, came up with that. It's one, it didn't, not all of it came up like that, but you know. Do we want our built environment to look like this? Is it efficient? No, but we're kind of stuck with it, right? So we need a way of visualising it, modelling it. That's why digital twins are around, right? Do we want this? It's fun to visit for about 2 days. It's like going down to London. I like it for 3 days and then I need to get out. Look at the highway. Funny story, I mean, I used to live in the Middle East, so I used to live in Kuwait, and they were talking about putting a transit system in, and everyone said it won't work, no one will go on this, no locals will go on it, they won't drive, they won't go with Indian labourers and things like that. This is like full every day now. You know, the roads are full. Do we want to live like that? Is it sustainable? Hell no. But I think we're getting a grip on all of this as an industry, as professions. Probably should have put the AGI in there. Maybe. But there's a lot of things going on around digital information, managing that data, publishing that data. One of the more interesting, recent reports, this Gemini principle, which is about national digital twin. If you don't know what a digital twin is, it's sort of like a 3D representation of the real world that you can model scenarios, analysis, all sorts of things. It's meant to be an absolute replica of our built environment. And there's lots of information going on there. And they produced a set of principles. And if we read through a couple of them, must be built on data of an appropriate quality, nice and woolly, isn't it? Must be able to adapt as technology and society evolve. Now that's a thing, right? That's good, right? Building an digital infrastructure based on common standards that can move as our technologies change. That's really important. Insight must provide determinable insight into the built environment. That's geodesign. The idea that we can get information out of what we already have and model different scenarios. Lots of cities around the world are looking at, well, what will the city look in 20 years' time? We're using a 3D base map, and we're modelling transport infrastructure around it. We're doing pieces of the puzzle. My journey really started with a geography degree, and I did a stint in a survey mapping company. Got fed up with being shouted at for 11 months. And went back to do a degree in GIS at Durham. We didn't get taught GIS very well, I must admit. It wasn't what we were using in the industry. I went out into the big open world,
said, I can get a job in GIS. And I didn't get a job in GIS. I said, I'm not going to be like my dad. I'm not going to work in planning. So I went to the Big Smoke and got a job as a planning technician in London. And that's where the technology and transformation started happening. At that time, the planning departments in local authorities were getting a lot of money to put their systems online, integrate something called the planning portal. I saw a tremendous opportunity for integrating some of the workflows. So instead of the agents putting in applications and printing them, giving them, getting them scanned, getting them printed, you know, all this repetitive work, it was great to see a system that forced us to look at what we were doing. A lot of local authorities initially, they took digital plans, printed them, so that the planners could go out on site with them. So all it did was transfer the cost. This digital transformation transferred the cost of printing from an agent to the local authority. So the local authority went, we've got to do something different about this. We're going to use mobile technology. So at that time, and that must have been 2003-2004, we were looking at digital technology, tablets, to manage this, to deal with the applications that were coming in. And I think it was an important lesson for that. We did get time to play with different technologies that weren't necessarily associated with the planning world. One of the simple things, like when you do a PDF, can you put what paper size it was on the piece of paper and what scale it is? It sounds ridiculous now. It should all be digital. Yeah? It still isn't. It still isn't. But out of all of this, I went and did a stint as a planning officer in a rural location, but I came out and worked with my father actually doing these city master plans. And now I'm in this world because I looked at a gaming type entertainment technology. I'm now looking at producing 3D modelling on a range of platforms for a range of different clients and helping them understand the challenges that presents for the design process as well as the analytical. Sort of here producing, this is City Engine producing geotypical modelling for a city in Russia, right, to be hosted on the web, based on underlying planning, designs and policies. Something like 400,000 buildings and produced within technology and geospatial information modelling, as well as CAD and other work. And some of the textures were produced in Photoshop. It wasn't a seamless transition. I wish it was, but that's the way that the direction it's going. We're producing apps, lots of things going on with dashboards. Now, this is the idea of having knowledge about the area you're going to design in on hand in front of you when you're doing those designs. This is just demo stuff within our office, but it's giving us metrics about how many listed buildings are nearby, what's in proximity to the site we're looking at, as well as information that we might have collected, like photography, by collecting on our app and sending it back to the office. And then there's simple editing tools, just really simple stuff that we're using now. It's transformation in a way. We're using mapping technology for job lists, right? So we know where every job is. It's surprising how many big international firms don't have a mapping unit that knows where all the jobs are. So they're probably, I mean, like in the UK, they're probably buying lots of all the survey data that overlaps. And we're looking at a world now where cloud technology, cloud computing, where I can farm out information. So with our Esri technology, we can farm out some of the processing work, the heavy lifting. Yes, it costs money, but it's better than waiting a week to do it on another method. I'm using Amazon Workspaces, for example, using ArcGIS Pro and City Engine. So I don't technically need this anymore, but for immediate sort of AR stuff, I do. And there's rendering. And all these technologies, you piece them together. There's a lot of work that Microsoft does, I think it's called Flow, where if you do one thing, another thing happens. Yeah? And we're piecing that together. We're in an environment where we can do that all together. And then there's some custom environmental modelling using 3D visualisations. That could be your planning scenarios. and putting it in a larger model and analysing it based on whatever data you need to put in it. This is the transport systems catapult in Milton Keynes, I think soon to be merged with the future cities catapult. And this is what they call an Omnideck, and it's a virtual reality headset. Same technology that I'm using at home. I can plug in and just walk around with the phone there. And you can put in agent-based modelling so that you can model cars driving around your streets and what happens when a pedestrian comes up to them. But still, in the same workflow, I'm still there. I can still produce it on this desktop and put it into that environment. Now, I don't know why you take digital technology where you can point and click wherever you want to go and make them walk there. It's good for some. So, kind of leads me to a final thought. Communication technologies, cloud computing, mean that I don't need a railway or an airport, which is kind of pressing at the moment. Think about if I don't have to travel, if I can work with teams, maybe that's ticking some other boxes, not just in our immediate built environment, but infrastructure in terms of transport and road usage. Yeah? There are other things going on besides just my own discipline. Right? Brexit has brought that a little forward. I'm looking at doing a lot more video instruction online. Right? It requires good broadband. Our office at the moment is 7 down, half up. But don't worry, I can get to Birmingham 15 minutes quicker if HS2 comes along. Right? Where's the infrastructure being invested? Fortunately, we have a community project coming with fibre, so we'll be fine next year. Or this year, hopefully. It's tremendous, this technology, and we need to sort of take that into account when we're working. Okay? So, geodesign is smart planning. We have the data, we have the technology. Let's do it properly this time.
Interesting technological solutions, but you also
will change us.
I think the real difficulty at the moment is the sheer amount of choice we have. Do I spend £2,000 for an ArcGIS license and do it? Or do I get a developer in to do it in open source software? And if I do one way, am I going to be stuck with that developer or with that provider? That's where standards, I think, kind of important. I think the barrier is more ourselves, that you give people a lot of choice. It's like modelling crowds, isn't it? You have a big door and lots of people trying to get out of it. You put a divider down the middle, and then they're only having a choice between themselves and the person next to them, not this wide range. So I think choice is probably the barrier. I think the technology is there. I think we can do pretty much whatever we want for a client. It's money and time constraints, obviously. But it's just sheer choice, sitting there and going, do I spend time learning this software or this software? And what is my next client going to want from me? And where is it? I mean, I have clients in the Middle East and America, and they all have different needs. So I do city engine instruction. And the people coming to us are architectural consultancies, planning consultancies, GIS professionals, local government, private practice. You've got military and intelligence circles in there, as well as entertainment industry. They're all using basically similar tools in very different contexts. And it's just getting a handle on the work. I mean, it's the workflow, right? It's that choice, that making sure. And I think people bring me in because I've made all the mistakes. And I can say, no, don't do that. Don't waste a year in that.
Yes, I had a similar question then earlier about skills and like skilling up. So I guess maybe there's people in this room who see this as like how do I get skilled up in that kind of set or environment. But I think on the barriers of how to see it more deployed on a UK level and a global level, it can't just be about skilling up this community. Are you seeing the skills and knowledge base of people that to ask for this, so you really are getting asked for this.
Yeah,
well,
educating clients.
How can we skill up our city planners or our politicians to know actually that this level of visualization is a helpful tool, and that maybe that's a direction that they should be moving. So it's kind of two bits on the skills.
Yeah. So sort of how to encourage that skill.
I guess it's one like the profession. How can we skill up to use this? And the other side is how can we encourage others to ask us for it?
Yeah. So knowledge is power. You don't have to own it. You don't have to know everything about everything.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people get panicked when they see other people doing loads of really cool stuff, and they think you should do that. Maybe you should focus on the things you're good at. Knowing that something can be done is really important. So even just having and here's what we can do, is enough for someone to go and explore that. Yeah? And that's what's happened with me. I go to conferences sometimes just to go, oh, there's a menu heading for that? you know, there's those, oh, I know where to look for it, I know the person who can do it. The knowledge sharing, I mean, in the academic world, when I've talked about geodesign and done city engineering, if I've done it in a course like the geodesign course, they are about talking across the design disciplines and the built environment disciplines. But you're still getting people very siloed in their academic discipline. There's no, and I mean, even my academic experience, you know, they taught us statistics on Apple Macs, you know, undergrad, right? And then they taught us a couple of versions too old for the real world to have any value or use when I went out. It was only when you got into work and they went, right, this is the software you're using, off you go. Put that on my CV, you know. But it's, on the private sector side, it's giving people the time to learn these things and not ridiculing them for perhaps experimenting with something that isn't immediately identifiable as their industry. I think that's been where I've been very lucky. In terms of local government, I mean, they just need more money in many respects, certainly in planning departments. Frontline staff with huge caseloads and a couple of policy team members, they need some kind of space to learn and crossover. And I think private sector teaching public sector that crossover, I'm not saying privatise it, I'm saying there's more learning forums that aren't specifically, we're all geospatial professionals over here and we're all planners over here, because it's not how the real world works. That, I don't know whether that answers it.
Have access to the software without having to pay the $2,000 it's through the university. So things like sending in all the auto case products and all these you can get it through the university. Not saying you've got the time to learn, that's a different matter, but you've actually got the software.
No, I mean if you are a student at the moment, I'm given access to all these different tools and which I've even just had a look at it. Rather than thought, well, I'm not dealing with that at this time. You know, just use the license and see what it brings you.
I really enjoyed that talk. I was just wondering as well, you talked about standards quite a lot, and where do you kind of see development standards being helpful for you? Where do you want them to be, and where are they maybe missing most? Right?
Development standards in what?
And smart cities, in terms of, because there is like that big push to fill them.
Yeah, and they've just released an international standard on that. And I've got a be honest, I don't read a lot of the standard documents in depth. And your question was about where.
Where do you want to see them?
Where do I want to see them?
Yeah. You said it's kind of like you don't want to be suffocated, but you also.
No, and I've given them the hard ask, haven't I? It's impossible to. Anything done by committee is bound to be a horrible mess of a compromise, which is good as well. I don't know. I think what we're seeing now is the start of something. I think the Geospatial Commission, I think that we're seeing people like the AGI doing events like this, outreach, talking to other industries, having that discussion. Because this sort of smart city standard is very deeply rooted, it feels like, in sort of a geospatial bubble. But that digital twin talk, that digital strategy will seep out into other industries. London recently, the GLO has asked about getting help producing a 3D model, just a 3D model of London. I've got one, just a 3D model of London and making it open for everyone. Why? Because they can see the utility in other people using it. We're still in its infancy because some of the software is not as capable or as easy to use. I think standards start with sort of open access to a lot of things and availability. I don't think hiding things behind, it's certainly with standards, don't hide it behind a paywall.
Well done. Let's just plot our way through this. Can we, as an industry, pick the best option? We can't really, but pick the best options to talk about the upskilling. Try and make it a bit more, a bit less scary.
My consultancy makes it very reasonable.
Well, on that note, come and talk. So,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks all for coming. Thanks, Hans Hutton, for contributing beer and joint hosting. Thanks. Do come again. Next talk, I think, is the same date, a month further on. So, do come for that. And thank you. Finally to Kelly for a very interesting talk. Thank you.